This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Xiaoning. It is 6 o'clock on the dot on Wednesday, the 24th of July. It's hump day. We're midway through the week. It seems like Monday and Tuesday just disappeared, really.
Yes, fantastic. Good morning, folks.
Good morning. Is it fantastic because you can't wait to get to Friday, right, Julian?
Well, I'm off tomorrow, so yes, this is literally my Friday.
Yes, you do that every Wednesday to annoy us, to remind us that it's the end of the working week.
That's
for
my mission
you at
in
BFM.
Life.
Yeah, as soon as we're out of studio, Julian's like, bye, guys, I'm going to enjoy the rest of my, what, five-day weekend?
Yes.
Something like that.
Well, actually, I have a day job, so it's not really a weekend for me.
Lies. You're just saying that to make
we
us,
know you watch Netflix at
better.
Home. Yeah, because you seem to have you seen this series? Have you seen that series? And we're like, no.
Well, that's a job too, you know. Somebody has got to do the dirty work of telling Netflix what's good and what's not.
So you're Netflix's quality control
yes,
person here.
Exactly.
In KL, is that it?
Okay. My dream job, actually.
Julian standard. If it doesn't mean it, don't watch it.
In the meantime, though, we've got lots of fascinating conversations for you lined up this morning. What are we going to be talking about first?
We're going to be asking whether there's any limit to, you know, age. I mean, hey, isn't the 40 the new 30s or is it the 50s, which is the new 30s? I'm confused, but it doesn't matter. Who knows? Anyway, age is just a number.
Okay, and the government has seen fit to have a financial education network to boost financial literacy in the country because our household debt is beyond 80%.
And if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Do let us know what you think because we'll be taking a look at social media responses throughout the show. First up, though, we're going to be talking about flight shame and why it may not work unless Asia jumps on the bandwagon. First though, here is Girlfriend is Better by Talking Heads, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin, Julian and Xiaoning. Now, we've talked a little bit on The Morning Run about something called Flygskam, or flight shame, and that's a campaign in Europe now urging people not to fly. I believe it has its origins in Scandinavia, so Sweden, Norway, Denmark, all the countries that are apparently doing way, way better than everyone else. But even now, airlines are jumping on the bandwagon. So KLM and Lufthansa are also encouraging people not to fly. I think Lufthansa has also come out to say that, oh, cheap fares are economically, ecologically, politically irresponsible. There is a part of me that looks at this and says, maybe it's a ploy to get to allow themselves to charge higher fares for flight tickets.
You don't say, Lin.
Exactly. I think that's exactly what's happening. But what they say is also not untrue because we are on the eve of environmental cataclysm in the world. If we don't do something about it, we are on a slow collision course to that, you know, the death of the Earth. Actually, the Earth will still be okay. It's just that we won't be around because the Earth is going to be too hot to live in.
So essentially, we're like the bacteria on the face of the Earth, right? So the Earth is just going to exterminate.
Yeah. I think even the bacteria would survive. A lot of the bacteria
Cockroaches and bacteria guys will survive.
But, you know, this is a reflection of the equation of the world in the sense that environmental, to save the world, is stuff of the war. Donald Trump has, walked away from environmental promises. And this is a case of the developed nations having to make concessions for developing nations to consume because everyone wants to be upwardly mobile and consume the stuff that all the rich in the West have consumed before.
Yes, and I guess this is the subject of this Bloomberg opinion piece as well, right? How do you get the buy-in of developing countries? Because you can have campaigns like this of flight shaming and, you know, staying grounded all you want over in Europe. But when you've got, you know, China, for example, here in Asia, 1.3 billion people, you know, and a growing middle class. I think the middle class is now at something like the size of 400 million people. They are one of the major drivers of air travel. And so how do you convince Asia? You know, you've got places like India, you've got here in Malaysia, we've got Air Asia, which is set to become one of the, I think, the biggest carrier in Southeast Asia by this year. So is it just that is it just that we're seeing, it feels almost like we're seeing this Western world kind of imposing their own
double standard
on us, because they've done this all already, right?
Yeah, they've traveled since the 50s, right? And I mean, for us, it's a relatively new phenomenon to travel so frequently. And
I think they've traveled since the advent of the navigational powers of the Portuguese and the Spanish Armada in the 12th or 13th century. I don't know, my history is quite bad.
No, that's true. But of course, they didn't fly. They took ships.
Yeah, exactly.
That
creates its own set of carbon footprints, right?
Well, in those days, they used wind. So less of a carbon footprint.
That's true. That's
completely
true.
Renewable.
Yeah,
yes.
Renewable. But I mean, in today, you can't deny the Chinese, right? I mean, they want to travel, just like us. I travel. I'm not going to say that I don't. It's very hard to deny someone this pleasure, right? Especially if you worked hard and you come so far and you kind of want to enjoy life a little bit. Travel is one of these experiences that most of us want to have.
Even if tomorrow the world is going to end?
Well, you better see it then before the world ends, right, Julian?
I know, but if you could save the world today by stopping your travels, or at least cutting down a large portion of it, what exactly could be done?
I mean, this
okay,
is
now
also
you're
the...
guilt shaming me, but
I'm not. Believe me, I'm on your side, because I think that there can be nothing short of the equivalent of travel food stamps for the Western countries, right? You ration the travels. That's why this is the stuff of war. I mean, if the environmental disaster is going to happen tomorrow, right, and we're on the eve of it, you have to restrict whose right is it to travel? That's the main question. You've got to restrict the rights of the West to travel. And not only that, they have got to fund the travel of the Asians and the developing economies, right? They have to do that. They not only got to cut back on the travels, they got to fund what we can do on our side.
To compensate for the ills that they've created, because the world's pollution is actually their problem.
And the monocrops are all from the Western countries, right? They got to pay for the environmental disasters that they have caused.
I'm not so sure whether I would go so far as to say they need to fund the travel for the rest of the world. But I do think that as the developed world, rather than saying, no, you shouldn't do this because, you know, you're going to be making the same mistakes as we are, rather than completely restricting or imposing that double standard on the rest of the world, maybe they should be the ones taking the steps to improve or to come up with alternatives. What are the other alternatives maybe to burning fossil fuels? You know, share that technology with the rest of the world, make it easy for people to adopt it, because one of the problems with a lot of renewable technologies on a larger scale is that they can be much more expensive to implement than usage of fossil fuels. And then, you know, that can be your way of giving back to this environment that you had such a hand in polluting.
But adoption takes too long. Adoption, like the process of adoption and going through the legal rigmaroles, will take too long, much longer than how to save the earth, you know.
In the meantime, the world is burning. That's Julian's thesis.
Actually, it's not only that the rich West should finance the poor East, but it's also that even the rich within the Eastern countries, you know, the upper classes, should fund the travel needs of the poor in the East itself.
Yes, I think as we saw in Paris, particularly when billionaires are actually moved to actually donate their money, they can really make the wheels turn. But it's just what motivates them to actually let go of their money. But in the meantime, do let us know what you think. What would convince you to stop flying? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a couple of messages coming up for you and then more fascinating discussion. So don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Blue Light by Block Party, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Shanning. Now, the International Monetary Fund may be considering amending their bylaws to remove an age cap that states that their managing directors must be under 65 years of age when they're appointed and they can't serve beyond their 70th birthday. And why they're looking at this is because one of their candidates, one of the favourite candidates for the post is Kristina Georgieva. She's the Bulgarian chief executive of the World Bank, and she is 65 years old. So I guess this is an interesting article for me in the Financial Times, because we have a 94-year-old prime minister. And I think in any way, shape or form, age caps of this kind is interesting to me, because why is it that they think that 65 means you're, does 65 mean you're over the hill in terms of the IMF?
Yeah, I think this is a kind of legacy policy, because I think they wanted to give a chance to the younger people to breathe new life into world banking policies in the past, right? But we are living in a society which is aging. So, and also we just recently opened up voting to 18-year-olds. That there is no reason why we can't open it up to the older people to participate in the global economy.
Yeah, it's true. If you're going to reduce the age limit down, then you should also they have no limit to the age up. That makes sense, right? And this ageism, I mean, if you think about it, it's what does it mean? The language of it also implies so much, right? That, you know, that you're not capable, you need help. So I think we should remove all these kind of labels.
Yeah, particularly since the entire world is living a lot longer, and we are actually seeing the standards of healthcare improve. So 70 years old now is not nearly, you're generally in much better shape than a 70-year-old would have been, say, 20, 30 years ago. The ECB, the outgoing ECB President Mario Draghi, he's 71, and he's done a pretty decent job of it so far.
Yes, I think it's true. Today's healthcare is much better. Mm-hmm. We take care of ourselves. We eat better. I think also there's more awareness in terms of mental health. It's not just physical health. There's a lot more medication people take, actually, to even delay the signs of aging from a mental perspective. But I think if everything is working, honestly, if all your faculties are there, why not? Why not continue?
I think there are a lot of research that has come out recently saying that actually the older people have a lot more experience, have a lot more maturity to handle the situation, right? Like tapping into their vast experience to do better for the world. And I'm sure that, there are many other older politicians that are up there who shouldn't be up there, but that's not because of their age, right?
No, maybe they were just bad politicians or useless politicians.
Name a few, right?
Yeah, later after the show.
I mean, age does not necessarily equal experience or equal maturity, though, to be fair. Because, but at the same time, I can see the arguments for age caps, because like we're seeing with the Democratic Party, particularly in the US, you see a lot of their candidates and a lot of their representatives are, you know, average age about 60 to 70.
Yeah, like Joe Biden, 72, right?
Yeah, Bernie Sanders is also in his 70s. So you wonder whether they are able to understand the different environments, the different atmospheres, the different needs and priorities of a younger generation. Like, how is a 70-year-old going to automatically understand the needs of an 18-year-old, for example? But when it comes to positions like the IMF and the World Bank, where you're not necessarily directly representing people, I feel like an age cap in that sort of respect is maybe not necessary. Because at the end of the day, with these kind of positions, it is experience that matters, right?
True. But then sometimes I think also, as I get older, I realize sometimes I need to learn to make way for the young, right? Mm. Not to say that there's no, I cannot like, translate my experience or transfer my experience, but also the young need to be encouraged to move up the ranks. Because if you just always hang on to power, like say a lot of our politicians, then where do the young get a chance to rise up?
Precisely. Well, let us know what you think about this. When do age caps for jobs make sense? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on the 6:30 news, and to take you there is Rod Stewart with This Old Heart of Mine, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Love Train by Wolfmother, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Xiaoning. Our Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, has launched a new national strategy to boost financial literacy. And this strategy was formulated by the Financial Education Network, which is an interagency a group co-chaired by Bank Negara Malaysia as well as the Securities Commission. And they've identified several priorities, including nurturing of values from young, increasing access to financial management information, tools and resources, as well as inculcating positive behaviours amongst target groups. I think this is quite an interesting, quite a good, personally speaking, a good move on the government's part, because this is one of the things that I wish I'd learned about when I was in school, like really how to manage your money. Because, well, you know, you in Kemahiran Hidup, you're taught at 13, 14, 15, they teach you how to do woodwork, they teach you how to do a bit of electronics, and they teach you what kind of forms you may need to start a business, but they don't actually teach you financial literacy tools.
Yeah, I think financial literacy trumps woodwork. Not to say there's nothing wrong with trying to be a bit of a carpenter, but in terms
I enjoyed woodwork, to be fair.
Yeah, but in terms of a life skill, this is definitely a living skill that you mm-hmm. would need every day, right? And that you should kind of start young and think about it from the moment actually when you can open a young savers account. I think it starts from there.
Yeah,
what you do with all your ang pao and Hari Raya money, right?
I don't know. If we are going too much the other way, I think that it's useful because that there is a lot of uneven information around. They call it information asymmetry, right? The financial institutions holds back a lot of information that harm us. Credit card interest rates, for example, 18% per annum, 2% a month, that kind of thing. You know, when you buy a house, is that the only option? What are the interest rates of buying a house? Is it good to trade in the stock market, which is promoted by so many financial institutions as well as the financial media, right? You pick up the newspapers and they ask you to go and trade, i.e. gamble in the stock market without knowing much about it. But also, I think that it's good that the government has framed this as sort of a literacy endeavor, and they give you a kit to take away. Because I think financial literacy should not be about formalized learning environment. Because if you go into too much detail, it becomes counterproductive. Like if you go and do a course on how the stock market works, right? That's not financial literacy. That's as good as, you know, that's learning how to get to know your car engine and fixing the car.
That just goes into becoming, too much specifics, right?
Becoming like a professional mechanic. They're two different things, you know. So I don't think people should learn about how their car works and what breaks down, and you know what to do in a, for example, your fan belt, you know, snaps or your tire gets punctured, but you don't need to become a full-fledged mechanic or even an engineer in that car, right? And I think sometimes there is that danger of going the other way.
Yeah, you basically just need enough knowledge for you to benefit you in your day-to-day life, right?
Correct.
Or even you may just need the knowledge of who to call in the event that your car has
absolutely.
A massive breakdown.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
I think also it's good if the literacy package actually brings home some home truths. Right, which is that you need X amount savings set aside when you retire. I think some of these things, people, it doesn't dawn on them. They don't realize that, hey, when I retire at 55, you automatically assume some of them will like, oh, I have EPF, that's enough, that's my nest egg. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, because I think data shows that, what, 2/3 of EPF members age 54 have less than 50,000 when they retire, which is clearly not enough. Especially,
insufficient, yeah, totally.
Especially if you live in Klang Valley, totally not enough, right?
And there's also
anywhere in Malaysia.
So you need some of these home truths, right? Some of these realizations
really
dawn on
you. But that's actually a function of the lack of income as much as it is a lack of financial literacy. Because
yeah,
a lot
true.
Of these people don't have enough income.
And it's the changing economy, right? Because in maybe about 40 years ago, you could save up, you could buy a house, and that house that you live in would be your investment that would tide you through for the rest of your life, essentially. And that's not something that you can do anymore, because just by virtue of the fact that cost of living goes up, inflation goes up, and your money is worth less than it was 20 years ago when you put it in the bank to accrue, what, 3% in terms of maybe in an FD? So it's not, you have to, the reality is that nowadays savings is just not sufficient to sustain you past retirement age, because retirement age is set at 55. But our average lifespan now
is
for
the
70s.
Men
is about 73.
High 70s, yeah.
And for women, it's about 77. So between 55 and 75, you've got 20 years in which you have to survive on whatever it is that you've put away, because presumably you've retired and you don't have an active income anymore. And about 70% of members of EPF members who withdraw their funds at age 55 use up their savings less than a decade after retiring. So then they don't have any more money to draw on. So it is very much very important, I think, for me to have this financial literacy to make people aware that that this is the economy that you live in nowadays, that you have to change with the environment. Otherwise, you'll find yourself in dire straits once you retire. But you know what? If you're interested as well in personal finance, you can also tune into the Ringgit and Sense show. That's every Thursday at 9:30 a.m. It's also available on the BFM app and Spotify. Do let us know also what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll take a look at what you've said on social media after this. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, that was Tomorrow by Silverchair, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Shaoning. Thank you for your messages this morning. We've been talking about financial literacy, age caps, as well as flight shame. And we have had a couple of WhatsApps come in from our listeners. So what do they have to say?
Yeah, Davide, Julian, he believes like you do that the world is going to grind to being inhabitable. We're just slowing it down for the next generation. So you want drastic action, go after the big pollution issues.
Well, there you go. Someone agrees with me. I feel like the guy who's the doomsday guy, the like corner street corner, putting up this sign, you know, like the world is gonna end. Give me five cents or something for
no,
it.
No, I feel like you're aiming too low, Julian. I feel like you should aim to be like the Nostradamus of our generation.
Oh,
you know?
Right. Oh, I thought you were gonna ask me to join Greenpeace or something, stop the whaling operations in the high seas.
Yeah, you could do that too, I'm sure. But yeah, I think you do make this point a few times as well, that it is actually also down to big corporations, because corporations have to play their part in addressing environmental issues. But it's kind of an odd sort of chicken and egg situation, because if people don't have that awareness, and people don't change their consumer habits, then corporations aren't going to change either.
Yeah, people don't usually know what's good for themselves. Usually, I mean, look at the opioid crisis. Look at smoking and things like that, right? There are very few times in our lives where we actually make active personal choices, which is why governments have got to step in and make rules for us, right? A lot of times. I mean, the libertarian in all of us may disagree with that.
Well, I think that there is some, that we are capable of making the choices, right? Sometimes we do make some good choices. For example, we made a change in May last year. We embrace democracy. So I don't think that necessarily we always run away from making these tough
choices.
Once
in a blue moon we do, but our debt level is still, household debt is still at 82%. So whether or not 80-something percent, whether that's good or not, 100,000 people have become bankrupt. I think that in general, we really have to be careful about the steps that we take and the choices that we make.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. MJ says, it's easy to blame the West and claim our right to travel like them, but instead of emulating them, why can't we do better? We would fly to Paris in a heartbeat, but have never been to Perlis.
I would like to go to Perlis. What's in Perlis? I have never been, I must admit. I never get out of the 3-kilometer radius from where I live. So
just because you go around in a scooter, Julian. Yeah. Because of your environmental reasons, you can't go very far.
It doesn't take me up to Perlis, but I would love to go to Perlis.
Yes, I think I've never actually been further north than Penang, but I guess this is a good point. We can take what the West has done wrong and see how we can improve on that if they're not going to do it themselves. But thank you very much, MJ, and to all of you who have sent in your messages. Unfortunately, we can't get to them all this morning, but thanks very much, and do continue to let us know what you think about our discussions in the morning. Right now, we're coming up on the 7 o'clock news, and to take you there is Always with Adult Diversion, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.